Good afternoon, I'm Linda Dow. It's a pleasure to welcome back to Lake 88 world-renowned underwater explorer and cave diver Jill Heinerth. Jill is an author, documentary filmmaker, and climate advocate. And she's the first explorer in residence for the Royal Canadian Geographic Society. She's received numerous awards as an underwater explorer, including a Lifetime Achievement Award from Women of Discovery, as well as the prestigious Stephenson Medal for her lifetime contributions to exploration in extreme environments. Jill has just returned from 6 weeks in Mexico working on a documentary film, and we're happy that she could join us here today. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Linda. It's great to be with you again.
Oh, great. Thanks for joining us. Now, you know, it must be a shock for you with all this snow just arriving back from Mexico, what, two days ago?
Yeah, it's good timing. I'm responsible for the snow shoveling in this family, so my husband's thrilled I made it back in time.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So what parts of Mexico were you working in, and what were you doing there, Jill?
Well, I usually end up working down in the Yucatan Peninsula in what to tourists is now known as the Riviera Maya, that sort of strip of the coastline between Cancun and Tulum. And it's an area that's quite rich in underwater cave systems. So that's what takes me to such a beautiful part of the world. And rather than hanging out on the beaches, I'm usually underwater in these beautiful cave systems.
So people can't see you and what you're doing.
This is
there's something to that as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how does this documentary compare to your previous one, Under Thin Ice?
Well, this documentary I was working on last month is actually spearheaded by an Australian company called Running Cloud Productions, and it's a documentary about my life story. So I'm in front of the camera for the most part rather than behind the camera in this work.
So this is quite different then, because the Under Thin Ice was done, it's a CBC Nature of Things, right? Mm-hmm. Done, and you were exploring how climate change has affected things in Canada's Arctic. So I was just wondering whether this was a continuation of that exploration, but you're telling me now that it's the story of your life.
It is. It's more like an adaptation of my book, Into the Planet.
Right.
And we'll get... So it'll tell a lot of stories, including my experiences in the Arctic.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And I'd like you to talk about your book a little bit later in the mm-hmm. interview. So you're known as an extreme diver. Mm-hmm. Why are you attracted to such a dangerous occupation? I have to know that.
Yeah.
So incredible.
Yeah. Whenever I take a risk, I mean, for me, it has to be worth it. Not just for like personal gratification, but to bring back some important information that can be helpful to humanity, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, because when I'm down in these caves, I'm swimming through these, you know, museums of natural history. We can look at Earth's past climate. We can look at ancient civilizations that have used these as portals to another world, and they leave behind, you know, cultural resources in these spaces. We can also study biology of animals that live in the complete darkness inside the planet. And more importantly, we can understand how water moves through the planet, that, you know, most critical essence of life that serves us and the natural environment, and even all the industries that we need to survive. So for me, it's, you know, it's kind of I'm the inner space explorer rather than the outer space explorer. And I think what we learn in these caves is quite important for our own survival.
How would you describe what you see in that underwater world?
You know, so many people think it's, well, why do you swim and just look at wet rocks, right? But in places, it's so extraordinary. Every cave is different. The last cave I was diving in just a couple of days ago was a very shallow cave. And interestingly enough, I entered through a small hole, and the first thing I did was swim underneath the main highway that runs along the coastline. And so that's sort of interesting to consider. But because this cave is only about 10 meters deep, during like lower water table levels, mm-hmm. Mayan people walked in and out of this cave, and you can see the evidence of how they've trampled the ground in what is now fully submerged. You can see old fire pits where there's still ashes, and then there's like, you know, scorch marks on the ceiling of the cave. But also we also find ancient fossils, though, because this used to be the, you know, the bottom, the seafloor of an ancient sea. So we find fossilized conch shells and brain corals and many, many amazing things.
And the color must be interesting, too, eh?
Well, it varies. Like, and actually, there's a pretty remarkable color in this cave I was just in, because they actually mined ochre, that very rich sort of red material that was used for dyes and paints. And they actually mined it out of there when they walked into those caves. And you can see the evidence of those activities.
That's amazing. How do you feel when you're swimming through these small, you know, little openings to caves? And do you get claustrophobic or what? Do you feel fearful of that?
I don't have a bone of claustrophobia in my body. I do feel fear, of course, because otherwise I wouldn't, you know, I'd be foolish. What I do is really dangerous. And so I have to accept a certain amount of fear and risk. But for me, when I'm actually swimming through these passages, it's quite a spiritual experience, you know, beyond the science or the image making that I'm doing. It's, I like to say to people that it's like swimming through the veins of Mother Earth, literally within the sustenance of the planet.
Do you have an obsession with this? It certainly sounds like you might.
I've done over 8,000 dives in my career. So
have you really?
That's fairly obsessive.
In your youthful, young life, that's amazing.
Well, yeah, just on the dawning of turning 58 shortly.
that's great. You know what does it mean to be a technical dive specialist, as you are? What does that mean?
Well, you know, most people who experience scuba diving in their life do so wearing a single tank on their back and just breathing some very simple apparatus to dive. But for me, I go deeper and farther into the earth in an overhead environment than that sort of technology would be acceptable for. So I have to carry a lot of redundant backup equipment. In fact, I'm oftentimes wearing something called a rebreather that's very similar to what an astronaut wears for a spacewalk. So I have to be self-contained, but I have to have enough extra equipment to get myself home safely, because I can't just swim to the surface if something goes wrong.
And how long would it take you to swim to the surface in the deepest dive that you have ever done about?
Well, my longest mission was a 22-hour mission.
22 hours in the water.
Yeah. So, you know, oftentimes when we do very long or deep dives, our body accumulates basically a penalty, and we can't just swim straight to the surface because our body collects all this unused inert gas, nitrogen and helium, that we slowly have to sort of breathe off by, you know, returning to normal surface pressure very, very slowly.
Right. And you explain that in your book as well. So we'll get to that, Into the Planet. We'll get to that a little bit later. You know, what's it like for you to get all suited up? That equipment must be so heavy and weighing you down. What's it like to get suited up and jump into frigid water like that? What do you think when you first jump off that boat?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the mission that I'm involved in, it might be a very significant amount of equipment, even more than I could carry and walk with. Like, I've carried, you know, 300-400 pounds or more of equipment. And so sometimes we even have to just put it on in the water. It's so much.
Oh, my goodness. Right. And how do you sink? What makes you sink?
Well, it's a delicate balance, because we have to design our gear so that we are able to sink. So sometimes we have to carry lead weights to counteract the positive buoyancy of some of the equipment that we've got. And so we're constantly trying to find the right balance so that you can just float neutrally, you know, as if you were flying.
You're listening to a world-renowned cave diver, Jill Heinerth. Jill, you're currently exploring what you call the sixth Great Lake. And I always thought there was five. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Well, the Ottawa River, we think of as the sixth Great Lake because its watershed is greater than Lake Superior's. So it contributes a massive amount of flow to the Great Lakes ecosystem that includes the St. Lawrence River. And I'm actually diving in Canada's longest underwater cave system that's in the Ottawa River. And it's actually a hope spot in the Great Lakes. We don't have any invasive zebra mussels in that part of the river yet. And we have some pretty abundant fish stocks and other life that we're trying to really quantify in terms of abundance and species, so that they can continue to provide the ecosystem services that they do to the entire system.
Is this something most people would know about this Sixth Great Lake, the Ottawa River? I mean, I've never heard of this before.
Yeah, no, I think not. And if you tune in to a three-part documentary series that's available right now on TVO and on okay. Smithsonian Channel, it's called Great Lakes Untamed. And the first of the three episodes contains a sequence about the Ottawa River as the Sixth Great Lake, and about my work in the caves there.
That's fantastic. So we'll just, can we repeat that just as we end the interview then? It's a TVO mm-hmm. documentary. Okay,
mm-hmm.
we can
Absolutely.
Repeat that, because yeah. that'd be fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk for a minute about your book, Into the Planet, My Life as a Cave Diver. It's a beautifully written memoir, by the way. I'm reading it again for the second time. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's my life story and all of the adventures and the crazy places I've been, from inside an Antarctic iceberg to underneath, Ural Mountains in Siberia, or inside active volcanoes, of all sorts of different stories. But it's more of a reflection on what I call the exploration mindset, and how we need to embrace and step towards fear in our lives in order to reap the benefits of exploration and discovery. And so it's really a description of how I learned to step into the darkness and do the things that terrified me as a young person, and slowly make that transition. Because whether you cave dive or whether you're just trying to thrive at your job or your business, you've got to learn how to cope with fear and change.
I think that's wonderful, and I did find that about your book. And I mean, it's an exciting read. It's often nail-biting. Break out in a sweat reading about some of those dangerous things that you've done down below the earth. It was good to read some of those insights as well, and those takeaways from your readers. So that's wonderful. And we can apply that, as you say, to anything in our lives. And I think we need that more now, because I think with COVID, we've become more fearful of different things. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yet COVID could teach us so much. I mean, I could literally hold all of the COVID virus that exists on the planet today in my hand, right? And yet it's affected all of us. It's affected everybody and everything mm-hmm. that we do. And I hope that rather than being fearful of that, we take away from that an education about the fact that we're so interconnected. Because whether you're looking at COVID or whether you're looking at water issues or global climate change, these are, you know, very large global issues that reflect our interconnectedness. And the only solution to these huge issues is going to be to band together and work towards a more positive future globally.
We're talking so much now about climate change, and the work that you're doing contributes to that science so much. What do you think we can do as individuals in our own small way?
Well, I think, climate anxiety is real. We're all just sort of dreading the future. Like, what next when we mm-hmm. have these horrific, weather events and things? And it can be overwhelming. So I would say just kind of set that aside. You don't mm-hmm. have to be the person that solves the big issue. So there are people working on that. But as individuals, we need to think about all of our choices about consumption and how we live on the planet, and ways that we can be, better stewards of the earth. And if we all make these small actions, then, collectively that will help to stave off even, a day of climate change. So I would say don't give up and continue to live in the most environmentally sensitive way that you possibly can. Reduce, reuse, recycle, get off of, fossil fuels as much as possible. But also think about interconnectedness and how you can reach out, learn more, and connect with people around the planet to help be a part of the solution.
That sounds good. You have also written a children's book called The Aquanaut.
Yeah.
The cover is so adorable. Talk for a second about that.
Sure. The Aquanaut, I wrote, it's a picture book, so very few words, but pictures tell 1,000 words. And it's really meant to share the things that terrified me as a kid and how I kind of turned those into my superpowers, like how a young child can, you know, do anything that they put their mind towards and be anything that they want to be. So it's kind of a positive affirmation. And, you know, for anyone that's having kids these days, that's one of the most positive things that you can possibly do, bring another person into the world. So I hope that maybe this book will help inspire them to be, you know, part of the solution in the future.
Where can we find your books?
Well, one of the easiest places is on Amazon.ca. And I actually have some signed books Into the Planet up there now. And the Aquanaut was just restocking. So there's some signed ones there, too.
Great.
And then, you know, any independent bookstore, you know, locally can also help you out. And I really support indie bookstores for sure.
Great, Jill. I just wanted you to please, you know, repeat the TVO documentary that will be interesting for us to watch and learn something about the Ottawa River that's so close by here.
Yeah, the documentary series is called Great Lakes Untamed, and you can find it on TVO, the Smithsonian, or even streaming on YouTube now. It's a beautiful, beautiful Blue Planet level documentary series by Merritt Jensen Carr and Ted Oakes, and I was really proud to be a part of it.
Wonderful. And when do you return to Mexico to finish working on your documentary?
Well, my next step is actually going down to Indonesia and then New Zealand and Australia. That's my plans in the new year first.
Well, good luck with all that, and keep having fun.
I will.
And I hope we can talk again, Jill, sometime.
Absolutely.
At your latest adventure. And we'll be watching for that new documentary as well. So I want to thank you very much for joining us. I know you're a very busy person, and we really, really appreciate this. So thanks, Jill, and good luck with everything you're doing. Have a wonderful Christmas as well.
Thank you, and a good snow day to you as to you too. Yeah.
Thanks, Jill.
All right.
You can learn more about Jill Heinerth by visiting her website, intotheplanet.com. I'm Linda Dow. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.